stay tuned for trailers of upcoming podcasts here on the Phantom Podcast Network. He was once one of the toughest frogmen in the business, and now he is a chef on board a Navy ship. Hunted down by Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Busey, and a host of B-grade action stuntmen, he is in a world of pain.
Oh, yeah!
That's right. Owen Wilson is Casey Ryback in Under Siege.
I got machine guns, man. It's okay.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Legal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the B-grade action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax. The lives of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Legal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
G'day guys, how you going? This is the Legal Mullet here from Quinlan's Canteen on the Gold Coast of Australia, proudly brought to you by, of course, Kevin the Reader Nerd Reitzel and Carl Wigner. He's amazing. Co-managed, co-financed, co-amazing podcast channel, the Phantom Podcast Network. That's right. Financed by their love of fandom. That's right. We're pouring our hearts into this and really giving it all, giving it everything. And I'm giving it full 100% mullet for you folks out there. And I'll tell you what, while we're cooped up in our homes, thanks to their fantastic governments of our countries, and of course, looking out for us, the people, that's right, making us safe and making sure that this COVID crisis finally rears its bloody end, we are checking out some great pop culture, you guys, and of course, us here at Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia. That's right. My name's Adam O'Brien, and we're going to be chatting about one of my favourite when it comes to homegrown, as in Earth, science fiction cop films. Now, this is a great film starring Jimmy Kahn, Mandy Patinkin, and Terrence Stamp. That is, of course, Alien Nation. That's right. Produced by Gaylan Hurd. That's right. The ex-wife of Jimmy Cameron, Jimmy C. JC in the house, yo. And, of course, when we're talking about Alien Nation, it's a really great little 90-minute film. It is a cop drama. Cop action film. It's got some great firearms in it, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. And, of course, it has some fantastic, things to say about, obviously, racism and stuff like that, stereotyping people, all that. So it's a heavily politicized film as well when you look at what it has to say about society. And in that is actually very smart series. Even when it went into a TV series a little bit later, and with Gary Graham and the other great talent that were behind that too. In some ways, the TV show is even better than the film. You know, the film only had, obviously, 90 minutes to tell its story, and it's more a procedural drama, but fantastic in what it is. And it's a real headbutt with pop culture as well. Anyway, we're going to get into that later. I'll save that for later, folks. And we're going to get into a little bit more news about a huge Australian blockbuster that's going to be smashing down the doors of all others in there. That's right, of course. Furiosa, folks, directed by George Miller, coming to you in 2022. That's right, look out Star Wars, look out Star Trek, look out Marvel. You got some real competition because Mad Max is freaking real. That's right. You heard that right, Kev.
Hey, man, did you say that Mad Max was real, man?
Yeah, I did, Kev. Mad Max is 100% real because the stunts are in the freaking camera, mate. It's the real McCoy. It's not Mickey Mouse, mate. This is the real deal. And we are definitely going to be giving you a lot of heads up over the next Well, it's almost 2 years away till we get all this fantastic stuff. 2021 we're going to get through. Obviously, the film is in concept, and we're going to be talking about lots of it. It's a prequel. Of course, we know Georges love making prequels, folks. Georges love it, but this George gets it right. So, more on that very soon in the news segment. But for now, this is how you can contact us here at the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Now, come on now. Where else can I listen to this show? I've been trying to subscribe. Come on, help me now.
All right, folks, here's how you can catch this show and many others like it. Make sure that you're on either the Podbean app or go to fpnet.podbean.com where you can find the master feed of Phantom Podcast Network, the channel with this show, and, of course, many others like it, like, of course, Culture Clash, your weekly dose of course, of Kevin and Kyle chatting about pop culture, movies, reviews, and more. Plus, Blood of Kings, the fantastic Highlander podcast. You can catch that. And, of course, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with, of course, Derek and Scott. You also catch Dan Udley. Mate, how you doing? You all right? Dan over there in Birmingham in the UK. Mate, how you doing? You all right? Of course, he's all right because he is doing, of course, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast. And it is fantastic. Go and check it out. And, of course, check out all the shows there. And you can catch me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on all the socials. Of course, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you'll find plenty to whet your appetite when it comes to B-grade action cinema and more.
Now, it's time for the news of all the latest action films and more. Here on Lethal Mullet.
Alright folks, time for the latest news live from here in Quinlan's Cantina. And the latest, of course, being the latest views that I have viewed of the 80s memorabilia, TV, news, you name it. We're going to talk about a show that, well, I can tell you, is news to me about how much, when it came to starts of careers for people, it certainly was the start of some of the best television from 1987 through to 1990. It was a three-year running show. Now, this is, of course, the biggest news to me was the amount of people that you just wouldn't expect. The names coming through here would, you know, a lot of them would go on to careers, either as, you know, actors themselves in lead roles. Some others would stay in TV world. And vice versa, it really was an interesting show. And it was all about the Vietnam War. So the news I bring to you folks is that this show needs to be reviewed. And it's, of course, Tour of Duty. And of course, it's about a US Army platoon in the field during the Vietnam War. It starred Terrence Knox, Stephen Caffrey, Tony Becker, Miguel A. Nunez, Raymond Franco, Stan Foster, Dan Gathier, and of course, Eric Brosscutter, and of course, a whole host of other amazing, talented people, which are in its three-year run. This show, I did see here and there, I think it was the third season that was really prevalent here in Australia, and of course, it was, you know, one of the greats when it came to just how, I think, you know, at the time, again, Vietnam was, you know, on a lot of people's minds as, you know, the American public, Australian and New Zealand, and of course other forces that are involved, were all really welcoming the Vietnam vets finally, after they have not been given the respect that they deserved coming back, not only just from the public at large, but also of other return services, you know, the RSL out here in Australia, which needed a real kick up its ass for what it did to the vets, without a doubt, because, you know, they weren't welcome back at all. But this show, I think, highlighted things and got conversation going, at least, in families, friends, and just the public at large to really what these people were going through. And it was a fairly a good, you know, especially the first season, until what US Army troops went through, I suppose, in Vietnam. You know, at the time in the 80s when we had films like Platoon, we had Hamburger Hill, probably my pick of the bunch. And a whole host of others. There's even one called Platoon Leader with the American Ninja. And, of course, the Michael Dudikoff. Get the Dudikoff to do it. Get the Dudikoff. But, again, you know, what's great about, you know, this series, it was that it took some time. You know, and there's a lot of great topics in there that, you know, political ones, ones about, you know, friends being lost, POWs, even love life in Vietnam. And, of course, we get to see it from both sides, you know, predominantly the obviously the US troops, but also those in and around them, some special forces as well. But, again, the faces that I remember out of this the most are Miguelé Núñez, of course, who went on to, of course, be in Street Fighter as DJ. What a freaking champion. Great actor. Tony Becker, I remember him a lot because he's just, he was a real soldier's soldier, you know, a real real man's man, and one that didn't take any crap whatsoever. You got, of course, Stephen Caffrey playing Lieutenant Myron Goldman. And, of course, everyone's buddy, Terrence Knox, playing, of course, Sergeant Clayton Zeke Anderson. Of course, everyone used to call him Zeke or the Sarge. And, you know, that's, again, we get to see it every week. It was on, I think, a Friday night. And, you know, you'd have the opening bars of Paint It Black by the Rolling Stones. And they really, really got you in the mood. That drum, they tan, 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 and it got you straight into it. And, of course, it's a great song, fantastic song, but really got it going. And, of course, as that launched, so did a whole heap of soundtrack albums that came out. You know, Tour of Duty Volume 1. To about seven. There must have been at least 10 soundtracks through those years. And again, they're all out on a CD, LP, tape, you name it, out here in Australia. You could get it all the time. So, what's great about this is that you get to see this platoon really start from first being in country, getting out there and having an NCO like you know, Zeke take them out. A young lieutenant first meeting Zeke. And, you know, getting to know, it's a classic thing, you know, somebody straight out of, like out here in Australia, we have Duntroon, where all the officers mainly train, get out of there, and then, you know, the first commissioned officers come out as a second lieutenant out here, or Libby, as they call them in the States. And, you know, you put with an experienced NCO, in this case is a staff sergeant, and out they go. They go out and obviously get assigned to where they're going. And this is all about that group getting together, getting to know each other. And again, a lot of these actors you've seen later in a lot of work. One of the big ones that straight away, especially in the first season, that pops up, Eric Broscotta. Now, of course, Eric went on to star in a whole host of great genre work. Of course, Starship Troopers probably being the big one. And he loses his head in that one. That's right. You know, Eric Broscotta has really, I suppose, carved his way as kind of like a farmer in that film. And it kind of, it uses that in this one too. That's sort of, you know, rural-born country guy that's really, you know, true blue American, I suppose. You know, believes in, you know, the being out on the farm, really doing a hard day's work and all that sort of thing. And the great thing is he's got a twin brother in this too, which is legit and plays off a great, you know, good guy, bad guy, or good cop, bad cop style thing in one of the shows in this one too. You have also, of course, Raymond Franco playing Alberto Ruiz. And Ruiz is great. He's the pig gunner. Of course, the pig being the M60, which is, of course, the GPMG, or General Purpose Machine Gun. He does a fantastic job in this. You know, he's come up from the streets and, you know, he knows how to fight. He knows how to handle himself. And he certainly knows how to take no crap. And what a perfect person to have on that too. And, of course, Taylor, played by, of course, Miguelé Núñez, is kind of like the schemer, the guy that's got all the, you know, knows what's going on in town, whether they're getting a good deal and stuff like that. And, you know, he's always trying to find the best out of any situation. He's great. And, of course, you got Daniel Purcell, played by, of course, Tony Becker. And all the cast in the behind the scenes said, you know, if there's one guy that's going to be the, you know, the real deal, the guy that's going to be, you know, a real soldier, somebody that you'd, you know, if you're going to put him in a real situation, get this guy out there. It is, of course, Tony Becker. And he looks the part. He really does. The other person they said was, of course, Terrence Knox, who, you know, is just somebody that just by the look of him, you know, he can handle himself. And, you know, he seems fun no matter what he does. And then, of course, Stephen Caffrey playing, of course, Lieutenant Myron Goldman. What's great about it is that he comes out as an idealistic lieutenant and slowly, It's almost like an apprentice and master sort of situation, or a teacher and apprentice, where, you know, Terrence basically shows that his wisdom gives him that wise, you know, visage that he had. And then you can slowly see in those three seasons as he takes little bits and pieces. And they learn from each other, which is something that, of course, a lot of those go through too. In the second season, we, of course, had McKay, which is, of course, the chopper pilot, who joined the group. And he's always in competition with Goldman until they sort of, at one stage, they eventually, you know, have a meeting of the minds and become good friends. And, of course, a lot of it's over Alex Devlin, played by Kim Delaney in the second season and third season. And, of course, she's the love interest that kind of forms a little bit of a love triangle. And you could thank China Beach for the inclusion of this sort of character. Again, it's great to have female characters in this period, but as a lot of the vets said, predominantly they were just literally, when they go back to base, they were going straight back out, in and out, and there was no real downtime for this sort of thing. So it was kind of a little bit strange to have in, you know, the environment like that, because they didn't have a lot of those reporters and stuff like that coming into that close in the camps. But the ratings needed it, and Kim does a fantastic job in this, may I say. We also have Kevin Conroy. That's right, Batman, from the animated series. And when he's not beating the pound out of course, Mark Hamill's Joker, in this, he plays Captain Rusty Wallace. He does a fantastic job in this. I think what you're going to find in this is that, you know, he really plays a tough, likable, but a person that will actually listen to you when it comes to as a captain. And again, experienced, and somebody that goes, you know, you have to really trust the NCOs. So here's where it gets interesting, because we get some really great co-stars in a lot of these episodes. Coming off the success of Predator, and of course, Action Jackson, and of course, the Rocky roles, was Carl Weathers. And he joined in the third season to play a seasoned colonel by the name of Colonel Brewster. But here's where I got the tongue tied over it. His actual name is Colonel Carl Brewster. So he got the Carl in there, no matter what. He got his own name in it. So he's great, because he's really playing off the team and how they go there through. Kyle Chandler, a very young Kyle Chandler, was playing Private William Grinner in it too. Fans of Jean-Claude Van Damme will know, of course, Alan Scarf. And Alan Scarf is known, of course, for the Jean-Claude Van Damme film, Double Impact, where he played Nigel Griffith. You know, in this, you'll probably remember it from that one too. And if he plays Colonel Stringer. Also, we have Lee Majors in an episode. Greg German as well. We have Bruce Gray. We also have James Hong in a couple of episodes. Actually, he plays Colonel Lee Trang and Jimmy and Quang as well. Pamela Gidley is in one episode as well. There's also Michael Fairman, who you might remember from Firefly. That's right. Michael Fairman, who's we have to be a fair age now, has played a lot of roles in the many years too. So you see, not only in that, he's been in Monk, Crash. He's also been in Sons of Anarchy. Just a lot of roles that once you see him, you'll remember. Of course, in Firefly, he played Adelaide Niska. Do you know The Art of War by Sun Tzu? Of course, that's the character that he had in that, and a fantastic role as well. There's just a host of, I mean, Patrick Kilpatrick's another one you'll find in this. He plays Duke Fontaine, CIA agent in it. Kamala Lopez is in it as well. Peter Trencher, the list goes on, folks. Honestly, this was really, you know, when especially in the second season, when they started actually shooting away from Hawaii. So a bit of background, the first season was completely shot in Hawaii and has, I think, a much more legitimate look to it. The vegetation, everything looks Vietnamese. I mean, it's as close as you're going to get to actually filming in the country itself. But what's great about the second season is being set in L.A., they were able to get a lot of the local talent to join us. So it really became more of a, you know, straight-up TV show, if you like. And that was what's so fantastic about that too. So I am currently about a third of the way through the third season. And again, of course, I'm up to the Carl Weathers. episode as we speak, and there's a lot more when it comes to special forces, particularly in this one too. Now, this is not realistic, let's face it. Ground troops, particularly US Army, are not going to mingle with such a, you know, a high-up, well-trained Green Beret or Navy SEAL or whatever, you know, unit it's going to be. They're by themselves and they're trained a certain way and must, you know, obviously be with the people that do that sort of great work too. So that's a part of the stuff that always could have took you out of it, particularly in the second and third season. And obviously some of the creators behind the show didn't like that either. They, you know, wasn't right. And of course, a lot of them, some of those people behind the scenes served in Vietnam themselves. So you got to look at that too. But is this the greatest of the Vietnam era? I think pop culture-wise, yes. It brings a lot of is it as bloodthirsty as, say, Hamburger Hill, Platoon, or even Apocalypse Now? No. But what it does bring is a lot of, the music, the pop culture, the time. They got a lot of the look right and stuff like that. So for a straight-up TV show and really getting out, I think they did okay. For me, it's a 4 out of 5. All right, folks, here we are chatting about James Caan's amazing sci-fi romp. You know, he's done some great stuff in the past. He's smacked around a few gangsters. You know, we know he's a tough guy, but now he has to take on aliens from another planet in Alien Nation. Joining me from the sprite place of the one, the only, Caboolture, northern end of Brisbane, of course, is the one, the only, director of My Saga, and of course, he's also the co-host, along with Blair, of My Saga, Adam Harris, Harris of the Harris Palace. Hey, mate, how you going?
Hello, 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 everyone. How are we this evening?
And I told Kev we'd finally get Mr. Harris back on the FPN, and it's happened. And he goes, hey, man, that's just great, man. You know what Kyle said? Kyle said, well, you know, there you go.
it's always good to come on. I love it.
And that's right. And, of course, oh, folks, look who's at the door. It's
oh, no.
It's our pal from Birmingham. Hey, mate, doing you all right? Oh, hey, Mark, how you doing, buddy? Hey, Mark's here.
What's Telfer doing, man? What's Telfer doing, man?
Hey, folks, none of them are here. It's just the two of us from Australia. Here at Quinlan's Cantina, chatting Alien Nation. Now, this is a 1989 cop thriller with basically a little twist. The twist is aliens have landed. Aliens have landed in the 80s, and they're called the newcomers. This is a slave race of alien who basically were able to crash their big flying saucer in America and get out and go, g'day, here you go.
Well, yeah, no, look, it was very cool. You could say this is the first version of District 9 we ever had. It's very similar in that sense, apart but the aliens are humanoid. But, yeah, I remember getting this on VHS and watching it at my grandmother's house. That was the first time I ever got to see it because I didn't get to see it in the theatre. So I was like, oh, this Alien Nation movie, it looks really weird. Popping it on, and man, I was freaked out by that movie. It was so strange. I had trouble understanding it. All I can remember is James Caan. I suppose you got that wrong. That's the wrong sci-fi. But James had the hand cannon gun, and I was like, man, I want
guns, guns, guns. Ooh, yeah. 4-5-4 Casell. Guns, guns, guns.
One of those guns, because it had the laser sighting on it and everything. It was badass.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about pretty much, probably today, still one of the biggest handguns in the world, the 4-5-4 Casull. In this huge handgun that, I mean, you could see the kick it was doing to his arms. It was just, he almost took out his head with it, you know. Massive firearm. We're talking about a movie that had a great opening. Obviously, it's a little bit of a robbery gone wrong for two newcomers that come in and try to hold up, just literally, I think it was a liquor store, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jimmy Caan rolls up with his pal, Tuggle, and they get out of the car and, how you going, mate? Yeah, good, mate, how are you? And before you know long, they're like, see those guys over there with long black shotguns. And, oh, yeah. And then, of course, it all goes to pot. And it's a great little, actually, it's a really good little chase. A little gunfight at the start, a little bit of a chase. But as one of the guys is getting out, he gets shot. Then opens a vase of what looks like blue liquid.
cracks it open and pours it down his throat, and then comes charging out, and he looks like he's 10 times the size. Looks like he's a linebacker or a rugby forward. And he's like, "Oh!" comes charging, and Khan's like, oh, okay, bang, 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 bang. He empties an entire clip into the thing, and it still keeps coming. So he knows that he needs to put the Beretta away and get something bigger. But that's what we're looking at, folks. You know, it is great. And obviously one of the great things about this is a little bit like 48 Hours and even Lethal Weapon, where they're pitted against basically a partner that they're not ready for, pretty much.
Yeah, look, it had that buddy cop sort of feel to it. Of course, you've got somebody who doesn't want a partner, who has an ill will against the newcomers. And then you've got someone like Manny Patinkin coming in there, and he doesn't get to say his line. I'm Igor Montoya. He's just like, I'm here, guy. You know, comes in there, and there is that, I guess, that lost in translation feel with the two of them, and that's where it plays off, because it is quite a serious film, but there is also that, like you say, that Lethal Weapon 48 Hours feel between the two of them, because you're trying to take the film serious, but then you've got that loss in translation in the dialogue between the two of them, which plays really nice.
Oh, it really does. Now, the bad guy in this is Zod. That's right, folks. It's Zod. It is Terrence Stamp. And he really, I mean, he just literally does Terrence Stamp as Terrence Stamp, pretty much. Walks in and goes, my name is Harcourt. He's just straight up. There's a great scene where Sykes, which is who James Caan plays, and, of course, Manny Patinkin's George, or Sam Francisco, and they come out into this little political, I suppose, speech that's just been done. Out comes the mayor, and he goes, oh, have you met Mr. Harcourt? And this is, this is my associate, Rudyard Kipling. And then Jimmy Khan goes, Rudyard Kipling, no shit. Oh, it's so good. Uh-huh. It's just perfect. Now, there's some great cameos in this too, as they're on the way to try and find, basically what they're doing is solving a murder at first. So there's a murder at the start. They're trying to find what's going on, and George obviously knows some of the newcomer world, so he's not wanting to be with George, but at the same time, what Sykes is doing is basically using George to get information about the different parts of the city and stuff like that, where the newcomers are. One of the newcomers they come up to in a bar just happens to be from The Terminator, and you've seen him in Wrong Bet and many other films, and of course, he's the guy who goes, wash day tomorrow, nothing clean, right?
Right? Brian Thompson, yes. He's always good. I like him as the alien bounty hunter, though, in The X-Files. He's one of my favourite roles he plays is in The X-Files.
He's great. He's been in Star Trek as one of the Romulans. He's been a Klingon in Star Trek. He's also been in Babylon 5, and I think Babylon 5's offshoot. I'm pretty sure it's either one of those, that or Crusade, obviously. Best person to ask would be Norman C. Lau. I'm sure he would know. Obviously, a little bit of a plug for Zocalo, the vidcast that he does there with Babylon 5. But, yeah, it's kind of like Brian's always great. He just turns up like in Wrong Bet in Van Damme's film. He's like, maybe we should lay all the cards on the table. You know, like, he gets some real zingers in this one. You know, like, he's always great. But a lot of people don't know his background. His background is he has a black belt in Hapkido. So, in some ways, I think he would wrap up Van Damme in a little lock and throw him in the corner, like with his stuff. Hapkido is pretty lethal stuff. But yeah, great role in that too. Obviously, there's a lot of great parts in this where they're just literally going around parts of LA, and it's going to the places where really, you know, let's just say, I won't say some of the dirty stuff that they do in this, because there's, you know, they talk about the Coney Island whitefish. I'm sure you can figure out that. You know, but one of the great things about this being in police procedural, it grows the confidence between obviously Sam Francisco and Matthew Sykes. I mean, they grow not only just as partners, but they become friends. And I think that's what's great about this one.
Yeah, look, it builds that relationship really nicely through the film. And I think that's where that lost in translation dialogue really comes off nicely. But yes, as the film progresses and we're seeing Los Angeles as it is, that's where I sort of get the idea when looking back at the film, it has got that District 9 feel, in the sense of this is outsiders coming into a world that isn't ready for them. Mm-hmm. How do they treat them? How do they adopt them? Where do you put them? You know, and how, I guess, once again, you could put this anywhere, even in today's society, of having outsiders coming in and how we treat those people, you know, and where we believe they should be placed in society. And that is really showcased throughout this film. And that's where, you know, Khan's character is coming through, Sykes is coming through, and he's starting to see that because he's very blinders in the beginning of the film. He's got his one and only view of the newcomers. But as the film progresses and he spends more time with San Francisco, it's, you know, that builds in that relationship and it builds in what he sees is actually happening to these people and how they should be being treated as opposed to how he thought, you know, in the beginning.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think what's interesting about it too is that, you know, like it's done in under 90 minutes. Like this is a very short film. Again, as we were saying on another show we've just recorded, which is, of course, The Phantom from Down Under, how, you know, the generations that have come past this, I mean, this is, what is it, 30-year-old film or longer, where it's, you know, you had to get so much exposition out of the way in the first 10 minutes of the film. I mean, you literally, I mean, this is Gale and Hurd, obviously James Cameron's, you know, former wife, you know, years ago, always was able to, no matter what she produced, she put out stuff that was bang on the buck when it came to speed, when it came to getting information out. I mean, the first 10 minutes of a film, you've got all your exposition, your world is set. You can't do that in Star Wars or Marvel now. They take time and unfortunately put so much more information out that you don't need.
That's it.
And I think with the newcomers, we know a little bit, but we don't know a lot. So we know, obviously, they've crash-landed a few years before the start of the film. We know that they were a slave workforce for a higher power of some type, whether it's an imperial force or whatever it was. So maybe that was going to be left for another film. I mean, who knows? It doesn't matter to this story. And, of course, we know that they were slaved under a drug. And very much like the Egyptians that built the pyramids were, like that you know, water bread mixed with beer. So it was a fuel that smashed them but also fed them, gave them what they needed. And it's the same with this. This Jabroka, or whatever, you know, the drug that is in there, not only does it put them in a stupor, but it gives them this absolute unbelievable strength, and I think that's what made this interesting. So there's a historical connotation there.
Yeah, look, I remember when I first saw it on VHS and I saw this drug and what it did, I was like, wow, man, that's pretty full on. I at first thought it was, I don't know if you'd know this, Adam, is, you know what Aggrol is?
No, nope, what's that?
Okay, Aggrol is to help with constipation. It's a white... that the alien drug was all tuba background. I thought, it looks like the stuff that my grandfather drinks when he goes to the toilet. I was like, why are they drinking that? It's giving them strength, but not where my grandfather needs it. But yeah, look, it was once again, this film, as you said, being 90 minutes long, they managed to pack in enough information to really drive the story, and especially with the drug and what they had experienced and why they ran off. Was really well done, and like I say, this film was made well before its time, with a lot of things there, and how it was done, and how it effectively gave that story, you know, guts the way through, but did it in such a short time frame.
It's just amazing. Now, obviously, this gave us a legacy too. Now, before we get to that legacy, let's just talk about the film. So, obviously, they find out Harcourt's behind everything and that, you know, all the little necessary steps, whether it's the lady in the club that they meet or, you know, obviously the little newcomer informants that they find as well, lead up to Harcourt basically being behind this drug that he's trying to peddle back in to not only... It's harmless to humans. So humans, got, you know, can make money off it and it does nothing to them. But do they really, you know, again, he's selling it to people that wouldn't care, you know? You know, hey, you know, it makes them smashed. Who knows? Who cares, eh? So there's that, right? But one of the great things about it, too, is that obviously it leads back to Harcourt becoming basically, you know, and again, he's going to be in charge of all this. So he's a former slave that wants to become like his higher echelon were, I think. But it leads to an interesting ending, an ending that maybe has too many endings. It does suffer from, you know, he takes the Jabroka at the end or whatever it is, and then he keeps coming back, you know, like they shoot him. They're like, all right, no worries, he's in the body bag. They put him in the back of the car, and then boom, he gets out again. Gotcha! It's a gotcha ending. It's a classic gotcha ending, you know? And then Sykes is jumping on the boat and then boom, oh no, now they're in the acid-filled water, of course. That's and it, he's still struggling and he's like, gotcha. and I mean, that's really what it was, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah. Oh, look, it felt like that at the end there. It just kept jumping. You thought, oh, he's gone, it's over. You could, no, it's over. A bit like Lord of the Rings, you know, you've got seven you actually get to the ending. But once again, it did leave it open for a continuing story, and we didn't really get that in film. We got a TV series.
We did, starring... Which is sort of
rehash.
It was. I don't think... Here's what's interesting is that the season that they did was... in part interesting, but it was kind of, it was a retelling really when you think about what was going on, but they did that. It didn't do as well as it needed to continue. But what we got, I think, was about five TV movies after that to sort of round out what they were going to do. And they were gold.
Yeah. Look, I enjoyed the TV movies because they did, they give more time to flesh out stories, which were really clever. And yeah, I loved them. They were great. But once again, it was an opportunity I think was missed with the TV series to carry forward the story as opposed to the retelling. So
definitely. And it starred Gary Graham, of course, who was in Robot Jocks. I mean, come on, you can't do better than Robot Jocks.
That's cool. Good old Robot Jocks. You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong. Of course, he also started later in Star Trek Enterprise, and he's definitely in the genre. But you look back in this. This is a film I can put on any time. The Blu-ray that's been released out of here, Australia, is got no bloody menu on it. It's literally goes straight to the movie.
Goes straight into it.
But it's good quality. The master they've done, it's pretty damn good. It's like Enemy Mine, two films that have just been literally brought straight out by things. I can't remember what developer brought it out here, but the prints are good. They're very clean, very nice, but no behind the scenes, no extras, no trailer, you know, all the classics. Yet you get it in the States, you ain't gonna get behind the scenes, you get a trailer, you get a commentary, you even get photos.
We miss out again out here. Dang.
Dang, exactly.
Be good to get one of those.
So, on your finger scale, the Hell and Back finger scale still running all the way back from Jogcast Radio.
Oh, boy.
What is it on your finger scale?
Oh, I'll give it 3.5 out of 5. Three and a half fingers. There we go. Half a knuckles there.
There you go, folks. It's 3.5. It is, and you got to check it out. Now, folks, if you're a streamer, like most of us are, we like our little streamers, and I'm not talking the things you put on Christmas trees. I'm talking about channels here. We're talking about, of course, I've got the old Fire Stick there. Now, Amazon Fire Stick is damn good. Yeah, and it is. It is very good. It also allows you to stream the Tubi channel, T-U-B-I, Tubi. And Tubi has some of the greatest action films ever made. Street Fighter, starring Sonny Chiba, and has Return of the Street Fighter. Is on there as well. There's also all of the Jackie Chan films from the early days. Even the one, I think there's one that pinched some of John Williams' music and just put it in the temp track. And you can still hear it there. Jackie Chan's walking out, I'm going to take on the Lord in that castle over there. And you hear the Jawas going.
Oh, really? Oh, man, I've got to find this out. I've got to get on Tubi.
It's crazy. Tubi also has Martial Law 1 with Chad McQueen. Now, we're talking, of course, Dutch from Karate Kid, the son of Steve McQueen. And he's a badass. And he's such a badass, he said, I'm too tough for action films. And he left them. And all he does is race cars now. That's all he does.
Oh, wow, man. I've got to get on this and check it out.
And, of course, there's all the Jeff Speakman films. And, of course, Jeff Speakman does the basically the Kenpo karate stuff where he hits you 10 times and you're already dead on the first hit. And, of course, Roddy Piper is in Hell. Comes to Frogtown, sorry. And it's on there, and I do believe the sequel's on there somewhere as well. And this is great. This was in the wake of They Live. And basically, this film's about this guy that gets kidnapped by a couple of women. One of them is Sandal Bergman from Conan the Barbarian, where she played the Valkyrie, basically. And she is the one that steals him away, and he has to take them to Frogtown in it. And it's exactly as you would think it is. Human frogs. and that they've got a battle on. It is, it's great. It's Mad Max meets Salute of the Jugger meets Frogs.
Meets Frogs. Oh, I love that. That's great.
It's great. It's fantastic. So, folks, you've got to check that out. There's also a whole heap of great ones. Now, one of the ones, I put this out last night, and a lot of people are like, you actually watched that? And it's called Samurai Cop. And I've been warned how terrible this is. And some people say, it's so terrible, it's good. Yes, I'm happy to say it falls into the Flash Gordon mold. Yeah, it is that bad that it's good.
Gotta check it out.
It is Trainwreck Central. Like it's... It is bad. Like it's... but it's that bad that it's great. The lead guy in it is Sylvester Stallone's bodyguard.
Is it the film where the main villain that he fights at the end is Conan from Tango and Cash?
Yeah, same guy. Yep, the jaw, the big huge jaw.
Broke Conan's jaw. That guy, he's the bad guy.
Bring him here, that guy.
Oh, man, I got to watch this film.
Of course, one of the funny things about it is they did a sequel to it in 2015, which is on there too, which I've got to watch. Like, it's, if it's that bad, it must be just as bad. And I hear a certain somebody might be in that film. Well, I actually watched a bit of a YouTube clip, so I'm actually wondering whether this is true, but Tommy Wiseau, I think, is in this.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's in it.
Oh, that could be cool.
So I don't know whether it's a spoof part that somebody's just put on YouTube, but when I saw that, and it's definitely the second film, or at least the set with Tommy in it, and he's doing what Tommy does, he creates a character. It's definitely
Tommy Wiseau. That is pretty cool.
Oh yeah. Now, have you seen The Room?
Yes, I have. I love it. I love The Room, and then after I watched that, I watched what's the film with James Franco that he did?
Oh, yes, yeah, the
I can picture the title.
Yeah. I'm trying to do it without looking it up.
I can't remember the title.
Oh, the something.
Yeah, the something.
Oh God, I'm trying to think of it now. It'll come to us, folks. It's coming.
Well,
it will eventually. Yes, he is definitely in. I've just looked it up. Samurai Cop 2 Deadly Vengeance. Cast. Tommy Wiseau plays Linton.
Really?
Yep. And, oh, wow, this gets really interesting. Bai Ling is in it as well.
Yeah.
The lead that is, basically his name is Matt Hannon. Plays Joe Marshall. That's the samurai cop guy. Got Loreen Landon's in it. Caden Cross. Oh, boy, oh, boy. I think I'm going to have to watch this now.
The Disaster Artist. That was the one.
That's the one, yes.
The Disaster Artist, yeah. So I watched that. So it was interesting to find out, I guess, a perspective of what happened. It makes me want to read the book of what happened with Tommy. But, yeah, The Room is something very special. It is the worst film and the best film ever made wrapped into one because it's that bad. Great.
The thing is, I actually get a bit of respect for Tommy. He makes characters that are, they're quintessentially his characters, like there's no getting around it, but it makes him compelling to watch.
Yeah. There's just something. He has that magnetism when you see him on screen. And sometimes you're there with your mouth on the ground going, oh, I can't believe he just said that, or how bad is that acting? But things you can't look away. It's like watching a car accident going at 1 kilometer an hour, and you know it's going to end badly, but you want to watch every second of it. Sort of like watching Tiger King on Netflix. You know it's going to end badly, but you can't help but sit there and watch in awe and aghast of what is transpiring in front of you.
Right, that's a bit of sci-fi fire now, lassie. Let's get into it now. Come on now.
Now, folks, back to our film in question, Alienation. We've got the trivia ready to go here. So here we go. It came out in 88. Brian Thompson, as we were talking about earlier, he plays the character Trent Porter. And he's the only actor in the films that made it into the TV shows where he plays the character Peter Rabbit.
Peter Rabbit?
So he played Peter Rabbit in looks like episode 99 called Rebirth by the sound of it. Mandy Patinkin was originally, as we said earlier off air, George Jetson was originally going to be what the character was going to be called, but Hanna-Barbera did not want them to have the rights to it, so be able to do that. Which is
that's fair enough.
That's fair enough. Now get this, folks. Now, who would you think, if Gail Ann Hurd is the producer, might have done a bit of a rewrite on this movie? Who do you think? Just have a guess.
Well, it'll have to be James Cameron.
Correct. That's right. Now, the movie spawned a short-lived television series, obviously in 89, after 88, which ran for about a year. And the picture was then turned, as we said, into the different TV movies. So that being Alienation Dark Horizon, Alienation Body and Soul, Alienation Millennium, Alienation The Enemy Within, and Alienation The Udara Legacy. And so basically right up to 97, so about a film a year they did, plus comic books, novels. I do remember the novels. Actually, that's something I remember seeing around the place.
I didn't read any, but I do remember seeing them around in the shops, though.
That's right. Now, one of the two science fiction films released in 88 that featured alien characters being assimilated in the modern day, obviously that is They Live as well.
Oh, yeah, that was so good. That's a great movie.
Oh, yeah, big time. Now, one of the great things about this, too, is it obviously the humans use a lot of nicknames. And the nickname the cast and crew actually gave to the alien characters was Potato Head.
I could see why.
I thought
the makeup was done particularly well on that film.
It was. I thought it was really good. Now, this was debut produced screenplay of Rockne S. O'Bannon. Now, what television show would he have gone to?
Farscape.
Bloody hell, yes. Farscape. Yep. And he goes, I think I'm going to have to write a screenplay for something we'll make in Australia, because they're crazy down there.
Yep.
Farscape,
man.
It is, good mate. At one point, you can see on a movie banister, Rambo 6.
Oh, really? Well, we know that exists now.
It certainly does. Now, the blue drug used by the newcomers is very similar to PCP, angel dust, and clearly has aggressive side effects, etc. Then we also have the real alien birth name of Detective Samuel George San Francisco is Sangya Sorensa.
Oh, interesting.
So let's try that again, folks. That's Sangya Sorensa. Now, when George is comforting an old woman, a poster of boxing champion Sugar Ray Leonard can be seen hanging next to the Pepsi cooler. Now, what's interesting about this film, like Back to the Future and other films, there's a lot of product placement in this.
Oh, there's a ton, absolute ton. I think it's just the era, though, too. When you look at a lot of films in that era, the late, especially the late 80s, product placement was massive in a lot of films. And I think that's how a lot of films were financed, to be honest. If you didn't have a Coke or a Pepsi or something in the background, I think definitely there's something that you'll see quite frequent. So I don't think this film was any different. It just felt that way, I guess.
That's right. Now, folks, we are going to have to talk about something very, very important. That is, of course, the bang-bangs in this one. That's right, the guns. As Kevin says, he's got a little thing he always says in this. Hey, man, guns, guns, guns. There you go. I've done it for you, Kev.
Guns, guns, guns.
There you go. Now, the big one, the big mama in this, of course, is the one we're going to be talking about. 454 Kazal, a conversion on a Freedom Arms Model 83 revolver. So, basically, Sergeant Sykes says, this Beretta is like a water pistol. I don't need it. I need something bigger. So he picks up a modified Freedom Arms Model 83 with the Range Master, which is a scope on the top.
Ah, so cool.
It is awesome. So it's chambered for 4.54 Casol, which can only take 5 in the chamber because it's such a big bullet.
Oh, man, that's so cool. It's a hand cannon. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
And the laser sight just makes it even better.
Now, it's modelled after the Colt Peacemaker, folks. It's a single action, so it's like your old cowboy guns. You got to cock back the hammer, which means you could fan this gun. I don't know that you could, though. It's such a heavy gun.
Yeah, well, it looks like it weighs a ton. That's what I mean, but You got someone like James Caan holding it. I don't think you got a drama.
That's right. Now, this model bullet, not the same gun, but same bullet, was used in another 1990s film, actually it was. I think it was 1990 it came out. And it starred Don Johnson and Mickey Rourke. You know which one I'm talking about.
Harley Davidson and Mal Roman?
Yep. So you remember when I think their whole team dies and they come back to the city. And they say, right, we're going to sit this one out. And he pulls up, oh, I got my Desert Eagle. And he goes, well, what the hell? You've been learning to shoot with what? Well, I got this gun the other day. It's got a conversion on it for a 4.54. You're learning to shoot with a converted 4.54 Magnum?
That's right, yes.
And it costs you $2.50 a bullet to shoot it.
Whoa.
Now, that's back then. Imagine what those bullets are worth now. I mean, it'd just be very expensive.
Yeah, it'd be worth it.
That's right. Obviously, the Beretta is in this. We get to see Sykes using it at the start. Tuggle, his partner that passes away, uses a Smith & Wesson 6.59, standard police issue by the look of it. There's a couple other handguns in this, but what is really interesting at the start is a Tommy Gunn-style magazine, a drum, put onto a shotgun, which you can do, folks. You can do this. And it's put onto a Benelli M1 Super 90. So it's a... by the look of it, a 12-gauge, by the look of it, with about 45 rounds in it, and it just goes, boom, 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 because it's semi-auto, folks. No pump in this one. Oh.
No, we've seen a few of those now pop up every now and again. I think, you know, with modern tech and modern gun design, we've seen a lot of those styles of shotties come through, which are very cool.
That's right. And, of course, in that chase at the start, you see an Uzi and a micro Uzi, mm-hmm. and you get to see, when he's sitting up on that billboard, the guy that takes the drugs later, firing off a Ruger AC-556 Mini 14.
Really?
Yeah. And that's basically, it's a Mini 14 copy down to the 5.56 chamber. So it's the one they use, you know, same as the M16 bullet, basically.
Yeah.
That same weapon, folks, in a bullpup, which you can get from Ruger, is used by Arnold in Total Recall. And of course, in Total Recall, nah, you think this is real quick? It is.
Bang.
One-handed, folks. Because you can, just because you're Arnold.
That's it.
So what's more to say about this film, I think, is it's prime for a reboot. What do you reckon?
Yeah, look, it'd be nice to revisit it in some way, shape or form, whether that be a direct, like a movie to something like Netflix or Amazon or something like that would be really cool, mm-hmm. or maybe a short-lived TV miniseries maybe or event that they're doing now, like on like the likes of Netflix and all that sort of stuff, which would be really cool. Oh, yeah, I'd be down for it. I'd be down for an Alien Nation reboot. That'd
okay,
be cool.
Who do you cast as San Francisco?
Right, who's dopey? I don't know. So you want someone who can give a bit of innocence. Oh man, that's a San Francisco. That'd be a toughie. I'm stuck. No, I can't even think of someone.
All right. We'll jump to Sykes. Who would you get to play Sykes?
Rugged Cop. Even that's hard because there's so many good actors out there.
I know who Kevin will be picking. Hey man, can I just jump in here, man? Tim should play it. Timothy Olifantino. Yes, right. But I'm going to give him this much. If he did choose that to play Sykes, Tim could definitely do Seth Bullock as Sykes. It actually would work to his strengths.
You know, actually, who could play Sykes? And it's a bit left field, but Bryan Cranston.
Oh, yes! I'm your Uncle Argyle. First learn to use thus, then I'll teach you how to use thus. Yes!
Yeah, I think that would be cool, because, you know, he's a bit older. And
he's cranky as hell!
He would be amazing in a role like that.
I've got it. San Francisco, Checky Carrier. Boom, done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no? Yeah, yeah, that could work. Yeah, no, I like that.
I like it. Actually, dude, we've done it. We've cast it. And who are we going to get to direct this thing? Let's get a left field director. Who are we going to get? Oh, no, Gareth Edwards. There you go. Done.
Gareth Edwards?
I mean, I'd be happy with that. Alienation. Whoever makes this, Fox, make it happen, guys. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Well, Fox, Disney, if you're listening, there we go. We've just rebooted one of your series for you.
Can you just imagine, Checky Cario, newcomer to this police station? Actually, he's great. And folks, check out his singing. This guy can sing.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah. Go and check it out. Checky Cario is great. I've loved him ever since I saw him in The Crying Freeman.
Oh, yep. Gold.
Or even in The Patriot.
Yeah, he was cool in The Patriot.
Kiss of the Dragon.
Dragon, yes. Bad Boys.
Oh, Bad Boys. I mean, the list bad just boys. Keeps going on. But folks, also, you know, to jump it in there. I mean, Bryan Cranston. Who else could do it?
Oh, look, I don't know. I think Bryan's just great being a bit older. I think he'd suit the part. I honestly couldn't think of anyone else who could play Sykes. But there are a lot of great actors out there who could play that rugged older cop sort of type. But
see, I didn't catch on to the last name before. Do you know who I thought it was?
Who?
Another Brian. You ready for it?
Yep.
Brian Cox is who I thought you said. Oh. That's why Uncle Argyle.
Good old Brian Cox.
But Brian Cox could play Harcourt.
Yeah. No. Yep. Definitely. I can see that. That would be cool.
Oh, well, if anyone knows Bryan Cranston well, and of course that might be Richard Epcar, Robert Turk, just let him know we want him to play Sykes.
Yep,
nah,
that'd be cool. I'd be up for that.
Oh, definitely. Let's do it. All right, folks, thank you so much for listening tonight, and of course thanks to Adam Harris for being on here chatting Alien Nation tonight, one of the great classics. If you haven't seen it, check it out. If you haven't seen the TV show or the TV movies, go and check those out. Pell, where can we find you?
You can catch me on the My Saga podcast, which is on iTunes, Spotify, and Omni Studio Air, and also on Facebook on the My Saga podcast Facebook page.
Awesome. So, folks, go and check it out, and we'll catch you next time here on the Lila Mullet podcast. Thanks so much for being on, Pell.
Happy to.
That wraps it up for this week here on the podcast, and now we are going to be heading off to our good pal, Kev, who's going to give us a little bit of a rundown on what you can find on this network. Are you ready, Kev?
Hey, man! Yeah. Let me just get that little track going. The promo. Hey, man!
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, a weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.